Job chapter 14. Job is at this point answering Zophar, who seems to be the youngest and in some ways was the least gracious. And as he comes to the end of this answer to Zophar, Eliphaz will get his second shot, who seems to be oldest. Hopefully we'll get to Bildad. I'm sure you're hoping that we'll get to Bildad one more time this evening. You guys are tough coming to work through these arguments, I'll tell you. You're Bible students. And Bildad, out of the three, seems to be bothered by the length of Job's answers. Because when Bildad and Job go back and forth, they're always talking about wind. You know, you're like the wind. Job says, I could be like the wind, but you're like the wind. They're always calling each other a bag of hot air, you know. So it's really interesting to see their personalities. We don't hear the tone of Job's friends. We hear their error. Even sometimes, again, when they're what they're saying is true, it's misapplied to Job because their whole premise is wrong for Job's suffering. Their tone, if we could have been there to see their faces and listen to the tone of their voice, they may have been more gracious than it sometimes seems in the print. But we will hear Job say, miserable counselors are you all, you know. And we do get some real indications that they are as ungracious as their counsel. At least in places. And Job, when we follow him, he seems to weave in and out, sometimes speaking to God, sometimes speaking to his friends, sometimes speaking about his friends. And again, it's hard for us to imagine how he's tracking all of this and how, you know, because he has a fever, he's infected with worms and sores and is overwhelmed emotionally with the loss of his children. It's hard for us to imagine his frame of mind, so he meanders some in his argument. Sometimes it seems speaking to God, sometimes speaking to his friends, sometimes just speaking about his friends. On the table throughout is God's reputation. That's what's at stake here. And the misapplication of truth. God blesses the righteous. The righteous are always flourishing and prospering and healthy. That's not true. The wicked are always suffering. That's not true. In the final analysis, in the eternal state, when we go to heaven, certainly the righteous flourish and the wicked suffer. But again, the psalmist is stumbled by the fact that the wicked are prospering and the righteous suffer. That is one of the great questions amongst unbelievers. Well, if there's a God, how come bad people are getting over on everybody and wicked people prosper and good people suffer? It's a great injustice that will be answered in the final analysis. But it is equally wrong to make a pat equation that righteous people always have it easy and sinners always have it bad. And it develops into the theology of the health and wealth gospels that we hear today, that if you walk with God and if you serve God, he'll increase gold in your life and silver. You hear those kinds of things. No, there's more important things than that to God. Whatever stage and platform he has us on, he's conforming us into the image of his son. He's doing a deeper work within us. It's like marriage. People get married and they think marriage is for their happiness. And I pray you're happily married, but the truth is, marriage is another arena that God will use to conform you into the image of his son. He has something always on his agenda that is more important than just your temporary happiness. And he blesses our marriages, but he also uses them to continue to chip away at us, removing unchristlikeness and infusing into us the very character of his son. So that is always a higher goal in regards to God working in our lives than just temporary prosperity, temporary health. He's doing a deeper work. Those things are going back and forth as these men banter back and forth with each other. Job, after answering Zophar here in chapter 14, is, you know, the first verse gives us, he's a little bit depressed here. He says, man that is born of woman is of few days and full of trouble. You're born, it stinks, then you die. You see, shortened down human life, you know, what an outlook. He cometh forth again like a flower. Yes, the joy of youth. And is cut down. You know, Job's got it down. Your life is the dash between the two dates on your tombstone. That's all it is. He fleeth also as a shadow, continueth not. Dost thou open thine eyes upon such a one? And bringest me into judgment with thee, now speaking seems to God, who can bring a clean thing out of an unclean? Not one. Seeing his days are determined, the number of his months are with thee. Thou hast appointed his bounds that he cannot pass. I believe that God knows the day that we will be born, and he knows the day that we will die. I believe there is sovereignty involved in life issuing forth and in life being called back to God. It's interesting, you know, we see wonderful couples in the church struggle with conception. So desiring to have a child, broken, spending thousands of dollars, going to fertility doctors. And you know, you have the question, Lord, why then do we see kids abused out here? Why do we see kids maligned and murdered? We see abortion, and here we are, you know, a Christian family. We would love to have a child and care for it and raise it. You know, there are tough questions, but I believe all of that somehow is under the sovereignty of God. Conception. Conception. He breathed into Adam's nostrils the breath of life, it says in the King James. It's in the plural in the Hebrew, the breath of lives. Breathed into Adam's nostrils the breath of lives. That means at conception, life is passed. Not just a fetus that somewhere along the line becomes a human. At conception, life is passed. At conception, it seems that the spirit is fused in to that which is conceived, that God is present at conception. It raises an interesting question to me about human cloning. If that happens, are we producing a vacancy for someone else to take over? I don't know. Just an interesting thought. But man has an appointed time. He has boundaries. You will live out your days, but you will not outlive your days. Certainly important to keep in mind, because oftentimes in the church we see someone just punishing themselves because a loved one has passed on. And if I'd have done this, do you think this would have? What if I'd have been there? Then they wouldn't have committed suicide. Or what if this would have happened? Then maybe this would have been different. If I hadn't let them out, they wouldn't have gotten in the car wreck. Or, you know, somewhere in all of that, we have to step back and realize that we have our hands on something that's divine, that is in with God, within God's counsels, and bow our hearts to that and say, Lord, our days are determined, the number of our months, they are with thee. Thou hast appointed the boundaries of man. He cannot pass them. Turn from him that he may rest till he shall have accomplished as a hireling his day. It's a, you know, it's just like a man going forth to work his day in the field. Lord, just let us alone so we can spend our day here on earth as a hireling working to the end of the day. For there is hope for a tree if it be cut down, that it will sprout again, and that the tender branch thereof will not cease. Though the root thereof wax old in the earth, and the stalk, the trunk of it, it dies, it seems to rot in the ground, yet through the scent of water will it bud and bring forth boughs like a plant. Better to be a tree, Job says. When man is cut down, he's gone. When a tree is cut down, it comes back. But man dieth. I know there's some trees around my property. I wish they would go away when you cut them down. And the ones you'd like to keep living, they die by themselves. But man dieth and wasteth away. Yea, man giveth up the ghost. And where is he? Isn't it interesting? Man giveth up the ghost. Where is he? The Old Testament, there is the concept of Sheol. We have in the bookstore a book by Shedd. The author's name is Shedd. It's called The Doctrine of Endless Punishment. Sounds like a good read, doesn't it? Oh, that's nice. I'll read that on vacation. Actually, it's a great book. It's small. You're encouraged as soon as you see it. It's short. But he rehearses the Hebrew concept of Sheol, the Greek concept of Hades, what hell actually is, what the scripture has to say about those places, how they differ, where purgatory, the idea of purgatory came from, the fact that it's unbiblical. He does a great job looking at these things. And Sheol in the Old Testament was the unseen realm. It was broader than Hades. Hades is definitely the place below where there's torment. Sheol can be that place where the wicked go. It can be just the physical grave. It can be the unseen realm. Hades would be within the concept of Sheol. Sheol itself as a concept could not be contained within the idea of Hades. It's broader. And Job, who seems to be going through these things before the Old Testament is written, no doubt around the time of Abraham or Abraham's father, very early after the flood in the patriarchal age, talks about death and the grave in a very kind of general way. It's undetermined in many ways. Man dieth, he wastes away, yet he gives up the ghost, and where is he? Where does he go? As the waters fail from the sea, the flood decayeth and drieth up, so man lieth down, and he riseth not. Till the heavens be no more, they shall not take awake, nor be raised from their sleep. Oh, that thou wouldest hide me in the grave, in Sheol, that thou wouldest keep me secret until thy wrath be past, that thou wouldest appoint me a set time and remember me. Now, there's interesting shades here. What is he saying? Is he saying, keep me hidden until your wrath is overpassed, then, until it's past, then raise me up again? Man lieth down and riseth not until the heavens be no more. They shall not awake nor be raised out of their sleep. Oh, that thou wouldest hide me in the Sheol, in the unseen realm, that thou wouldest keep me secret until thy wrath is past, that thou wouldest appoint me a set time and then remember me. He's wrestling with this idea. When you're dead, but no, Lord, there's a place where the dead go. And Lord, when your wrath is run its course and is through, Lord, then remember me. And when he gets to chapter 19, he affirms more clearly the resurrection. Certainly, Isaiah says this, which is interesting too. Thy dead men shall live together, with my dead body shall they arise. Now, this is Isaiah 26, just for your own information. Awake and sing, ye that dwell in the dust. For thy dew is as the dew of herbs, and the earth shall cast out the dead. Come, my people, enter thou into thy chambers, shut thy doors about thee, hide thyself, as it were, for a little moment, until the indignation be overpassed. For behold, the Lord cometh out of his place to punish the inhabitants of the earth for their iniquity. The earth also shall disclose her blood, and shall no more cover her slain. Come, my people, enter into thy chambers, shut thy doors about thee, hide thyself, as it were, for a little moment, till the indignation be overpassed. Maybe an interesting look at the rapture from the Old Testament. Interesting portion of scripture. Job here, oh, that thou wouldest hide me in Sheol, that thou wouldest keep me in secret until thy wrath be past. I don't know. That thou wouldest appoint me a set time and remember me. If a man die, shall he live again. All the days of my appointed time will I wait till my change come. If a man die, shall he live again. All the days of my appointed time, your translation might say my warfare, my severe labor. That's the idea. There is a labor to earthly life. It's a warfare. All of the days of my appointed time, and he had said that, there's an appointed time, will I wait till my change or my renewal comes. So he seems to be looking at something. Man dies, will he live again? All the days of my warfare, my struggle here, I'll wait, he says, till my change, till my renewal comes. And again, what a blessing to have all of that illumined through the gospel of Christ, through the Spirit. If a man die, shall he live again? That's the center of everything we believe. What a wonderful thing to have that as the center of our belief, the forgiveness of sins, the resurrection of the dead. What hope. You know, as, I don't know about you guys, when I watch the news, I'm glad I'm a Christian. When I watch the news, I'm glad I have another hope other than negotiation. That Jesus is coming. That there is a kingdom coming. That he says if he wouldn't return when he did, there would be no flesh left alive. Who knows what's going to be let loose that he'll have to interrupt to preserve the human race. Thou shalt call, and I will answer thee. Thou wilt have a desire to the work of thine hands. Job says, you know, I'm made. I'm your, the work of your hands. You'll have a desire for me one day. For now thou numberest my steps. Dost thou not watch over my sin? You know, that's what you're doing now, but that's going to change. My transgression is sealed up in a bag. Thou sewest up mine iniquity. There's a day when all of that, it seems to be saying, is going to be set aside. You're going to have a desire for the work of your hands. And surely the mountain falling cometh to nothing. And the rock is removed out of his place. The waters wear the stones. Thou washest away the things which grow out of the dust of the earth. Thou destroyest the hope of man. Thou prevailest forever against him, and he passeth away. Thou changest his countenance and sendest him away. His sons come to honor, and he knoweth it not. A little more depressing here. And they are brought low, but he perceiveth it not of them. But his flesh upon him shall have pain. And his soul within him shall mourn. That sounds pretty hopeless. I'm glad Eliphaz interrupts here because Job's getting way down again. What a perspective. Without hope. Sons come to honor. Chances are you're not even going to be there to see it. Flesh that's upon you is filled with pain. Your soul mourns. Then Eliphaz answered the Temanite and said, should a wise man utter vain knowledge and fill his belly with the east wind? You know, there's the Sirocco here, the hot wind that comes from the east. You're like a bag of hot air, he says to Job. You know, what's this have to do with being a wise man? Should he reason with unprofitable talk or with speeches wherewith he can do no good? Yea, thou castest off fear. The idea is you're casting off or setting aside the fear of God and restrainest prayer before God. You know, with the example you're setting, you're setting off the fear of God. There's no fear of God. You're claiming to be innocent when you're not innocent, and you're going to, you know, the way you're acting, you're straining prayer before people won't even go before God to repent, to ask forgiveness. For thy mouth, and all of that is untrue, by the way, for thy mouth uttereth thine iniquity, and thou choosest the tongue of the crafty. Thine own mouth condemneth thee, and not I. Yea, thine own lips testify against thee. You know, Job, you're claiming your innocence, and you're talking about, you know, things being hopeless because of God being the way of the problem. Not God, Job, it's you. Certainly, there must be sin in your life for all of these difficulties to be washing over you. Art thou the first man that was born? Notice, or wast thou made before the hills? Hast thou heard the secret of God? And dost thou restrain wisdom to thyself? Job, are you a know-it-all? Does wisdom, you know, abide with you? Are you the first guy born, or were you created before the hills? You know, there's some very interesting allusions to, and you have to figure if they're that soon after the flood. There are many scholars that feel that Shem, Noah's son, outlived Abraham. So, possibility that Job has crossed paths with Ham, Shem, or Japheth, with Noah's sons. There are many allusions to the flood and to creation, the primeval earth in here. Are you, you know, the first man, or are you the one that was made before the hills? Have you heard the secret of God? Do you retain wisdom to yourself? What knowest thou? What we know? Do you think you know and we don't know? What understandest thou which is not in us? Do you think you have a hold of something we don't? With us are both the gray-headed and very aged men, much older than your father. Now, we're not sure if he's saying with us, meaning Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar, are both the gray-headed and very aged men, that we are older than your father, or is he saying we stand with the opinion of those who are older than your father? We're, you know, the position we take is the position of the ancient men, and you should respect age and wisdom, Job. Are the consolations of God small with thee? You know, don't you want to listen to our counsel? Is there any secret thing with you, Job? Why doth thine heart carry thee away? And what do thine eyes wink at? The idea is you're closing your eyes, you're in defiance that you should turn thy spirit against God and let such words go out of your mouth. Job, you're in rebellion. What is man that he should be clean? Job had said that. And he which is born of a woman, that he should be righteous. Because that's what Job's claiming. I haven't sinned. It isn't because of any evil. He says, what is man that he should be clean, or the son of a woman that he should be righteous? Behold, he putteth no trust in his saints. Yea, the heavens are not clean in his sight. Now, interesting phrase. He puts no trust in his holy ones. Literally, no doubt, speaking of the angels. And maybe close enough to the fall of some of these angels that seems to have taken place before the flood. He doesn't put any trust in the angels, the holy ones. Yea, the heavens are not clean in his sight. Maybe referring to something that they knew more of than we do. How much more abominable and filthy is man, which drinketh iniquity like water? I will show thee. Here, I'm going to show you a thing or two. And that which I have seen, I will declare. Now, Eliphaz is very experiential. Remember, he did that before a spirit passed across my face at night. My hair stood up on my body. You know, now he says here, same thing. I want you to listen to me. I'm going to tell you something. That which I have seen, I will declare unto you. Which wise men have told from their fathers and have not hid, unto whom alone the earth was given. And no stranger passed among them, unto whom alone the earth was given. Maybe he's talking about Noah and his sons right after the flood. The wicked man travaileth with pain all of his days, and the number of years is hidden to the oppressor. Now look, if this is early after the flood, one of the testimonies that Noah had was that I alone found grace in the eyes of the Lord. On the other side of the flood, the entire generation was corrupt before the Lord. They had corrupted the earth. The imagination of their heart was evil continually. And God judged them because of their wickedness and destroyed the earth because of its wickedness. And I alone and my sons and our wives were spared because I walked before the Lord and found grace in His sight. So, you know, there is a lot of that very simplistic theology here, and maybe some of that being passed down, you know, and it sounds a lot like that. The wicked man travaileth with pain all of his days, and the number of his years is hidden to the oppressor. A dreadful sound is in his ears. In the prosperity, the destroyer shall come upon him. Just when he feels like things are going great, all of a sudden, the destroyer is going to come upon him. And maybe he's pointing his finger at Job. I mean, here is Job, the wealthiest and the greatest man in the East. All of a sudden, one day, his kids, his herds, his family, his belongings, his servants, all are stripped away. He believeth not that he shall return out of darkness, and he is waited for of the sword. He wandereth abroad for bread, saying, where is it? He knoweth that the day of darkness is ready and at hand. Trouble and anguish shall make him afraid. They shall prevail against him as a king ready for battle. Some comforter, huh? This is just what you need to hear from your buddy when you're at your lowest. For he stretcheth out his hand against God, and strengtheneth himself against the Almighty, the sinful man. He runneth upon him, he runs in rebellion against God, even upon his neck, upon the thick bosses of his bucklers. He's in rebellion against God. Because he covereth his face with his fatness, and maketh collops of fat upon his flanks. Great bumper sticker there, huh? Because prosperity was equated with health and flesh on your bones. People that were poor were undernourished. Someone who had fat on his face and collops on his flanks, nice and fat, was considered to be blessed and prosperous. And he covered his face with his fatness and maketh collops of fat on his flanks. He dwelleth in desolate cities, and in houses which no man inhabiteth, which are ready to become heaps. He's an outcast. And Job is sitting outside, it seems, in the city dump. He shall not be rich, neither shall his substance continue, neither shall he prolong the perfection thereof upon the earth. He shall not depart out of darkness. The flame shall dry up his branches, and by the breath of his mouth shall he go away. You've had it, Job. Let not him that is deceived trust in vanity, for vanity shall be his recompense. Now that's sound advice in the middle of all of this. Let not him that is deceived trust in vanity, for vanity shall be his reward. And there's a play on words here. Let not him that is deceived trust in emptiness, because emptiness will be his very reward. Truth. From the beginning. Eve. Adam. In the midst of the garden is the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and the day that you eat thereof you shall surely die. The word of God, simple, straightforward. A child can understand. Satan comes to deceive. The admonition throughout the New Testament, be not deceived. What a man soweth, he shall also reap. God is not mocked. You shall not surely die. God knows the day you eat thereof, you'll be wise. You'll be like God. It's good to taste, to make one wise. Good to look upon. God is holding out. And the deception that we can live beyond God's revealed will, we can step outside of it, we can take things into our own hands, and there won't be any problem. That God can reveal His will to us, that we can transgress it, do what we want, get our satisfaction out of this world the way we want to, because if we wait for God, it'll never happen. And that there won't be a problem if we transgress the word of God. Well, Let not him that is deceived trust in emptiness, because emptiness shall be his reward. Sobering. It shall be accomplished before his time, and his branch shall be green. He shall shake off his unripe grapes as the vine, losing the fruit before it ever comes to fullness, shall cast off his flower as the olive tree. For the congregation of hypocrites shall be desolate. Job, you're a hypocrite. You're trusting in vanity. This is unbelievable. And fire shall consume the tabernacles of his bribery. Some of his tents were burned down. It says that fire fell out of the sky and so forth. They conceive mischief and bring forth vanity, and their belly prepares deceit. Then Job answered. He can't take anymore. Job answers and says, I have heard many such things. Miserable comforters are you all. With friends like you guys, who needs enemies? I can't believe here. You're eating me more than the worms are. Would you guys cut me a break? Shall vain words, and the word, King James says, shall vain words, it shall words of wind. They're back to the wind again. You think I'm the wind, you're the wind. No, you're the wind. Well, you're hot air. No, well, you're the east wind. Well, you're the west wind. Well, shall vain words have an end? Are you ever going to stop, Eliphaz? Or what emboldeneth thee that thou answer? What did I say to get you started? Tell me so I don't do it anymore, is what he's saying. I also could speak as you do. If your soul were in my soul's stead, if you were in my shoes, I could heap up words against you. And notice this, and shake my head at you. So Eliphaz must be saying, and this is what will happen to hypocrites. And that's an important part of communication. Don't laugh. When we do our premarital, the book Before You Say I Do, one of the chapters in there on communication says that 6% of communication is content, 30-some% is attitude, tone of voice, and about 51-52% of everything you communicate in life will be your actions. So if Kathy and I get in an argument, and I start to walk out the door, and she says, where are you going? No, she doesn't do that. I'm just going to use us as an example to make you guys feel good. She says, where do you think you're going? Well, her content was, where do you think that you're going? Her attitude was, beep, 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 which was way louder than her content. And I say to her, I'm going for a walk. And I slam the door on the way out. Well, my content was, I'm going for a walk. The tone of my voice was, you make me sick. And when I slammed the door, it said, and drop dead while I'm gone. Everybody who's married is laughing here. Because, if your wife says, honey, it would be nice if we could take some time and get some things done around the house. That's different than nothing ever gets done around here. Because then she's stating something that might be true, but her attitude is so loud that you can't even hear the content of what's being said. Now, the lesson in that, by the way, if you're married, is the majority of what you communicate the rest of your life will be in your actions. The next percentage of it will be in your attitude. And very little will be in content itself. We don't lack for knowledge in Christian marriages. We lack for doing, serving. If you're willing to belong to the Holy Spirit in your marriage, you'll be fine. But we get a little bit of insight here. Job says, I could do what you're doing. If you were in my position, I could heap up words against you and shake my head at you too. Bip, 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 you hypocrite. So we get a little bit of a visual help here. But, verse 5, I would strengthen you with my mouth, and the moving of my lips would assuage your grief. I would encourage and comfort you. Job says, if you were in my position, and you were the one that's suffering, and all your children had been killed, and everything was ripped away from you, and your health, and you were in agony and pain, I could stand around you and heap up words against you and shake my head too. That's not what I would do. I would seek to comfort you. I would try to turn away your grief. Because he knows he's on the receiving end. How suffering and it sensitizes us. How alienation makes us sensitive to what it means to be alone. How getting stabbed in the back makes us sensitized to what it feels like to be stabbed in the back. You know, again, I always think of Paul, that I might know him, the power of his resurrection. And I'm right in there with Paul. The fellowship of his sufferings. Power of his resurrection, right there. That's where you should have ended the verse. That's the fellowship of his sufferings. Those closest to him, turning, forsaking him. It's difficult, painful. It brings us into an interesting place sometimes, of finding the Lord and finding that he'll draw close to us in those times and discovering the fellowship of his sufferings. If by any means I may be made conformable to his death. Job says, I wouldn't do that. I would try to comfort you. Verse 6, though I speak, my grief is not assuaged. I can't comfort myself. And though I forbear, what am I eased? But now he hath made me weary. Thou hast made desolate all my company. Now, it seems that he's saying, God has wearied me, but you have made desolate all of my company, all of my, you know, the friends I thought I have. Thou hast filled me with wrinkles. That's bad. Which is a witness against me. My leanness is rising up in me. It bears witness to my face. You see how emaciated I am and how aged I look in my suffering. You know, guys, can't you have any mercy? He teareth me in his wrath, who hateth me. Now, something very interesting is happening here. Job, again, I think leaning back in his suffering, closing his eyes, he is sinking into a very interesting place here. Let's read through this and see if you can sense that. Because we know the Lord is not tearing him in his wrath. Remember what's happening behind the scenes here. Who God has given permission to test Job. Listen to these words. See if you get a sense of this. He teareth me in his wrath. Who hateth me? He gnasheth upon me with his teeth. Mine enemy sharpeneth his eyes upon me. They have gaped upon me with their mouths. They have smitten me upon the cheek reproachfully. They have gathered themselves against me. God hath delivered me to the ungodly and turned me over into the hands of the wicked. If you read through Psalm 22, you'll find very much the same thing. They are gaping their mouths upon me. I am handed over to the hands of the wicked. You read Isaiah 53. You find very many of these things, being smitten on the cheek and so forth. There's, you know, we say, Lord, you know, I want to know your love, Lord. I want to know, Lord, I want to grow in grace and knowledge of who you are, you know, and it says that we love him because he first loved. I want to know your love. Do we really? You know? And of course the answer is yes. But what if it's sometimes then, take thine son, thine only son, whom thou lovest, as God said to Abraham, take then the most precious thing in your life. Put it on the altar. Then you'll know how much I love you. Because that's what I did. I took the most precious thing in my life and I placed him on the altar. If you step into the fellowship of the sufferings of Christ, the measure of God's love is greatly enhanced. Lord, you went through this for me. Job somewhere, obviously, as we're looking at this, steps beyond his present circumstances into the passion of Christ. To what degree he understands, I'm not sure, but no doubt there is something prophetic here. And again, James chapter 5, verses 10 and 11 places Job among the prophets in what he says there. I was at ease, verse 12, but he hath broken me asunder. He hath also taken me by my neck and shaken me to pieces and set me up for a mark as a target. His archers compass me round about. He cleaveth my reins asunder and doth not spare. He poureth out my gall upon the ground. He breaketh me with breach upon breach. He runneth upon me like a giant. Interesting. I have sewed sackcloth upon my skin, no doubt his clothing sticking to him, and defiled my horn in the dust, the dignity of my life. My face is foul with weeping, and on my eyelids is the shadow of death. Not for any injustice in my hands. Also my prayer is poor. The Lord hath laid on him the iniquity of us all. It's very interesting, this part of Job's cry. And it's worth reading Psalm 22 and Isaiah 53 and then coming back, looking at this on your own. And in that, he's saying, I really don't know. This isn't because of any injustice that's on my hands, verse 17. And it's not, you know, my prayer is genuine before the Lord. O earth, cover not thou my blood, and let my cry have no place. Remember, we just read in Isaiah that the day is coming when the blood, you know, is going to cry forth from the ground and justice is no longer going to be covered. Remember when Abel was murdered, God says, his blood crieth from the ground. I hear the voice of your brother's blood. So Job is saying here, don't let this injustice, God, just be covered up. Cover thou not up my blood and let my cry have no place. The idea is don't let it be hidden away somewhere. Also now, behold, my witness is in heaven. Here's Job again lifting his head above the dark clouds one more time. My witness is in heaven, and my record is on high. And we can say that tonight as we sit here. My friends scorn me, but mine eye poureth out tears unto God. Oh, that one might plead for a man with God, as a man pleadeth for his neighbor. When a few years are come, then I shall go the way whence I shall not return. My breath is corrupt. My days are extinct. The graves are ready for me. Again, what an outlook. Here he goes way down again. My breath stinks, you know. And he says that more than once. It must, really. Are there not mockers with me? No, it seems that he's speaking to God about his buddies now. And doth not mine eye continue in their provocation? They continue to provoke me. Lay down now, put me in a surety with thee. Who is he that will strike hands with me? I can't even find a partner in all of this. You know, we see that today. You go to Israel, and the times we've been there, of course, we're not going there anytime soon, it seems. But when we have been there, you'll see them in the sheep market, different places. When they reach an agreement, they smack hands. That means, you know, we think, you know, we've got it going on. That they've been doing that for thousands of years. Just different arrangements. And who is there that will strike hands with me? For thou hast hid their heart from understanding, saying, Lord, they don't understand. Therefore shalt thou not exalt them. He that speaketh flattery to his friends, even the eyes of his children shall fail. He hath made me also a byword. You know, these guys, all they do is say good stuff to you. You know, their counsel is so wrong. He hath made me also a byword of the people. And aforetime I was as a tabard. You know, he's made me a byword. People say, when see somebody, you know, Job says, even in my day, when you see somebody suffering, you say, oh man, that guy's a Job. Oh, that guy's suffering like Job. He said, I've become a proverb, a byword. Mine eye also is dim by reason of sorrow, and all my members are as a shadow. Upright men shall be astonished at this, and the innocent shall stir up himself against the hypocrite. You know, he's saying, I'm innocent, and you three guys are hypocrites. The righteous also shall hold on to his way, and he hath clean hands, that hath clean hands shall be stronger and stronger. But as for you all, must be from down south, do you return and come now? For I cannot find one wise man among you. So he's kind of at least holding his own in the debate with these three against one, and he's all beaten up, but he's giving these guys their medicine back. My days are past, my purposes are broken off, even the thoughts of my heart. They change the night into day. I can't sleep at night. The light is shortened because of the morning comes too fast and the night comes too soon. If I wait, the grave is my house. I have made my bed in darkness. He's really depressed here. I have said to corruption, you are my father. I have said to the worm or the maggot, you are my mother and my sister. He's saying, you know, that's a better family to be in than hanging around with you three guys. Yeah, the idea is the grave. And where is now my hope? As for my hope, who shall see it? They shall go down to the bars of the pit, down to Sheol, when our rest together is in the dust. This is all. Now, Bildad, he can't stand it. He's got to break in here, and we can get through chapter 18. Then answered Bildad, the Shuhite, remember, the short guy, and said, how long will it be before you make an end of words? He hates Job's long answers. You know, when are you going to stop talking? Before you make an end of words, mark, and afterwards we will speak. Just let us know so we can talk again. Would you please, Job? Wherefore are we counted as beasts and reputed vile in your sight? What do you think we are, animals, the way you're talking to us? He teareth himself in his anger. You know, we must look at his friends now and say, hey, he's tearing himself up. Shall the earth be forsaken for you, Job? Shall the rock be moved out of its place? Yea, the light of the wicked shall be put out, buddy. And the spark of his fire shall not shine. The light shall be dark in his tabernacle, and his lamp shall be put out with him. The steps of his strength shall be straightened, and his own counsel shall cast him down. Job must be rolling around going, oh, no. You know, Bildad must be one of his favorite out of the three, I'll tell you. For he has cast out into a net by his own feet. If you're caught in your own trap, Job. He walketh upon a snare. The jinn, the trap, shall take him by the heel, and the robber shall prevail against him. The snare is laid for him in the ground, and a trap for him in the way. Terror shall make him afraid on every side, and shall drive him to his feet. Paranoia is going to make you, you know, makes the wicked man flee when there's no one chasing. His strength shall be hunger bitten. And destruction shall be ready at his side. It shall devour the strength of his skin. Oh, thanks. You know, here's a guy, you're supposed to be my friend. Worms are eating my skin and falling apart. And you're telling me because of my wickedness, I'm caught in my own trap, that my strength and, you know, is going to devour my skin. Even the firstborn of death shall devour his strength. His confidence shall be rooted out of his tabernacle, and it shall bring him into the king of terrors. Man, imagine being, you know, I talk to people here at church all the time whose mom or dad or relatives dying of cancer. Can you imagine going next to their bed and saying some of this stuff? You must be in sin with this cancer stuff going on. Don't try to deny it. What do you think I am, a stupid beast? The light of the wicked's going to be put out, Annie M. And, you know, you're caught in your own snare. You're caught in your own trap. Your own skin is rotten because you deserve it. And God's going to bring you to the king of terrors. You know, that might make your relative well enough to sit up and slug you. It, terror, shall dwell in his tabernacle, because it is none of his. Brimstone shall be scattered upon his habitation. His roots shall be dried up beneath him, and above shall his branch be cut off. His remembrance shall perish from the earth, and he shall have no name in the street. He shall be driven from light to darkness and chased out of this world. Man, he shall neither have son nor nephew among his people, nor any remaining in his dwellings. What a cruel thing to say to a guy who just lost his 7 sons. They that come after him shall be astonished at his day, as they that went before were affrighted. Surely such are the dwellings of the wicked. And this is the place of him that knoweth not God. You know, you get next to your relative's bed, you're trying to witness to them, to lead them to Christ, to give them some hope. This guy says, you're out of here. The king of terror is going to chase you from light into darkness. You're done. That's the destiny of those who don't know God. Then Job answered and said, I can hear it, how long will you vex my soul and break me in pieces with words? Hey, you know, guys, this hurts. I have a heart. What are you doing? These 10 times have you reproached me. Are you not ashamed that you make yourselves strange to me? You're supposed to be my friends. And, you know, I think a real heart cry. Be it indeed that I have erred. You know, even if I have erred, my error remaineth with myself. I'm not leading others astray, and I don't know what it is. And even if there's something wrong here, this is not a, you know, an overt thing the way you guys are talking about. If indeed you will magnify yourselves against me and plead against me and my reproach, know now that God hath overthrown me. It isn't you. And hath compassed me about with his net. You know, he's answering, Bildad said, because you're wicked, you're going to fall into your own net. He said, this isn't my net. This isn't because of my wickedness, this trap. This is something that God has done. He compassed me with his net. This is something the Lord has brought into my life. Behold, I cry out of wrong, but I am not heard. I cry aloud, but there is no judgment. There's no justice. He hath fenced up my way that I cannot pass, and he hath set darkness in my path. He hath stripped me of my glory and taken the crown from my head. He hath destroyed me on every side, and I am gone. My hope hath he removed like a tree. He hath also kindled his wrath against me and counteth me unto him as one of his enemies. Now, that's not true, but Job is despairing. His troops come together. They raise up their way against me and encamp round about my tabernacle. He's saying, Lord, I'm just a tent. You need to get it. What are you doing? You need to set bulwarks and bring your armies to camp around me? I'm not a fortified city. I'm a tent. Down to 21. He hath put my brethren far from me. Now, by the way, loneliness, isolation, Job seems to be suffering more from that, from the physical pain itself. There are things that are more painful than physical suffering. To be suffering physically and then to be maligned by your friends, by those closest to you, to be forsaken by the most precious of human relationships, is very painful. And we see that loneliness and isolation here as we read down to verse 21. Listen to these things. He hath put my brethren far from me. Mine acquaintances are very estranged from me. My kinsfolk, relatives, have failed. My familiar friends, good friends, have forgotten me. They that dwell in my house, my maids, count me as a stranger. My servants. I am an alien in their sight. I called my servant. He gave me no answer. I entreated him with my mouth. My breath, there it is again, is strange to my wife. Though I entreated for the children's sake of my own body. I can't approach my wife. She won't listen to me. I begged even for the benefit of the kids. And yea, young children despise me. You know, kids like everybody. This guy must really be in bad shape. You know, he's covered with worms and fever and pus, and even little kids, ew, look at that, you know, and kids will do that. They're that honest. Ew, look, you know, I remember there was this kid that used to come around when Joanna was a little, play with all the time, and the kid had impetigo all the time. And, you know, you're just one of those kids, you love the family, but that kid is dirty, and play with that kid, you're going to get impetigo, you know, and just try to, you can't say that to a 5-year-old, because they say to their friend, you have impetigo, I can't play with you, my parents said you're dirty all the time. We didn't say that, get in here, you know, teach your kid not to lie. We didn't say that. I remember one time we were in, Mikey was about 3 years old, and he used to love kung fu, you know, those kung fu movies that you see on TV. Where do I get you? And I'm gonna have to, you know. And we were in Super Fresh, and there was an Asian gentleman in front of us, and Mikey was 3 years old, sitting in the shopping cart. He said, "Dad, look, kung fu." Job says, yay, young children despise me. Ew, mommy, look at the man with the worm. Shh. You know, I arose, they speak against me. All my inward friends, my most intimate friends, you guys, abhor me. They whom I love are turned against me. Very painful. My bone cleaveth to my skin and to my flesh, and I am escaped, notice, with the skin of my teeth. You wonder where that came from. It came from Job, because there ain't much skin on your teeth. There shouldn't be anyway. My bones are cleaving to my skin. You know, you see somebody that's that emaciated, you can see their skeleton through their skin. Have pity upon me. Have pity upon me, O ye, my friends, for the hand of God hath touched me. Why do you persecute me as God, and are not satisfied with my flesh, my illness? Can't you see I'm suffering? That is really, really low.